Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our Together Apart meeting on this Lord's Day morning. We are so glad to have an opportunity to communicate with our dear brothers and sisters in the best way we can under the circumstances. We welcome you and your families. We welcome our friends and brothers and sisters and other places as well who may be with us today. We bear in mind that worship of the Lord is not canceled. Just the fact that our ability to be together physically is limited. We also bear in mind the fact that we're still a congregation of the Lord's people. We take joy in remembering that. In fact, I can stand here and in my mind's eye, I can see all of you. By the way, you look good in your Easter pajamas as well. I can look over here and hear the Grimms and the Joneses and the Ratterys, and over here the Davises and the Morrisons and the Schwartz and the Jobes. Back here the Lines and Dovia and Taylor and John Davis and his family. Up here Bill and Gail and Dennis and Carolyn and Ruth, Jean and Kelly. Back here Bob and Leona and Johnny and the Nemos and the crews who sit over here, and then here John and Coita and Jerry and Carolyn and Chris and Trish, Jason and Laura. I can look back here and see the Lorenzes and the Nichols, Miss Betty Glenn and Lucille. I can look over here and see Travis and Pam and Tom and Jamie and John Dutton and others over here. And back here, the Crawfords and the Marsoffs and the Sekulics. Over here, Andy's family, the Bowlings, and so on. A whole congregation of the Lord's people in our hearts. And we thank Him for that fellowship. This morning, we'll think especially about the ways in which the Lord strengthens us and gives us courage and removes our fear. And we're going to see that He does it in an unexpected way. We're glad today that Riley is going to lead us in our songs together. Josh Luna will lead us in our prayer. We'll look into the Lord's Word together as we observe the Lord's Supper together and remember Him and celebrate what He's done for us. Jason Luna will lead us in prayers then, and then Barney Crawford will have some announcements for us, and then our elders' prayer today for us. As we turn our thoughts toward worship, here's a reading from Psalm 36. How precious is your steadfast love, O God! The children of mankind take refuge in the shadow of your wings. They feast on the abundance of your house, and you give them drink from the river of your delights. For with you is the fountain of life. In your light do we see light. Oh, continue your steadfast love to those who know you.
Thanks to Brian and Josh for leading us in our service so far. Just about the most impressive assurance that we need not fear that we can find in the New Testament comes through a man who falls in fear at the feet of the reason he gives us not to fear. Does that make sense? It fits the way the Lord and His ministry in our behalf went about things, and it often fits the way the God of heaven works through the humblest circumstances in life. Remember that we are met here today because of our conviction that God brought victory, the victory we needed most, through an apparent defeat and then raising his son up from the worst that could be done to him. We have some things in common with the man through whom this assurance came to us also. He's John the beloved apostle. He is separated from people he loves for a different reason from our being separated from each other today, but even more fearful, if anything. John was on an island called Patmos, where the Romans were accustomed to separating prisoners or people that they thought might cause unrest and isolation. John was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day. He was in the Spirit, probably according to chapter 4 of this book, meaning that God was revealing something to him as a prophet and apostle. We're in spirit, meaning we're together in our mind and heart. It was the Lord's Day, meaning that this is the day the Lord was raised up from the dead. This is the day, if I read Leviticus 23 right, that Pentecost would have occurred and the church was established. The Lord's Day became a technical term for the first day of the week by the second century. The Lord's appears one other time in the New Testament. It's in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 20 with reference to the Lord's Supper, something that we will be engaging in together in a few minutes. John is also having something in common with us in that in the Lord, in Jesus, he's our brother. He's our partner in the kingdom and in the troubles of life. In that situation where John was at that time, that day, he hears a voice. The voice like a trumpet. Remember that God came to meet the nation of Israel at Mount Sinai with a trumpet, a loud announcement of his approach and of his presence. This voice tells him that he has some writing to do. Only he needs to write what he sees. It's not easy to write what you see. And then it was to be sent to Ephesus, which was probably some 70 miles or so, or 50, between 50 and 70, to the northeast of where John was. And then these letters were to be taken the way a messenger would go to all the churches in that part of the Roman province of Asia. It was a message for the church, a message for his brothers, a message for the Lord's people. John turns to see what this voice, he tries to see this voice. And that's where we'd like to pick up with what brought him to the overwhelming fear and what became the reason why he tells us there's no need to fear. Revelation 1, beginning at verse 12. Then I turned to see the voice that was speaking to me, and on turning, I saw seven golden lampstands, or candlesticks, some version translated. And in the midst of the lampstands, one like a son of man, clothed with a long robe and with a golden sash around his chest. The hairs of his head were white like wool, like snow. His eyes were like a flame of fire. His feet were like burnished bronze refined in a furnace. And his voice was like the roar of many waters. In his right hand he held seven stars. From his mouth came a sharp, two-edged sword, and his face was like the sun shining in full strength. When I saw him, I fell at his feet as though dead. But he laid his right hand on me, saying, "Fear not, I'm the first and the last,
and the living one. I died, and behold, I am alive forevermore. I have the keys of death and Hades. Now, what is there in this vision that both brings us to the deepest, most profound kind of awe, while also assuring us that there is no need to fear the worst that life can do for us? That's an important question. Let's kind of start at the end of this reading and work our way back up through it for a few moments here. First off, we're told that this living one has the keys of the most dreaded and the unseen threats that might be on the hearts and minds of human beings. He has the keys of death and Hades. In this book, death, of course, is what can happen to the physical body or what can be inflicted on one by persecution. Hades is the unseen world that lies beyond it, the grave or the place where the spirit might go. In this book, death comes along reaping and Hades comes along gathering up. It's the work of death. You can see what I mean by the dreaded and the unseen here. But the thing is, the keys are in the hands of this one John has seen. The keys stand for the power or the authority to open so that nobody can shut, or to close so that nobody can open. It's in the hand of this one who will tell John he doesn't need to be afraid. In this book also, it's interesting that when we come toward the end of it, in chapter 20, death and Hades themselves end up being thrown into the lake of fire. In other words, being subject to the Lord's judgment and having an end put to them. But for now, his work does not mean that death and Hades are absent. Doesn't remove them from being realities. There's still things that we dread and that we don't know about and we can't see. But this one, this living one, has the keys. He has the authority or the power to let us loose from that, to bring freedom from it. It no longer, the power of death no longer belongs to the one who holds us in fear to it. There's a reason, though. There has to be a reason for any kind of hope or assurance or encouragement. The reason here is that he has the keys because they belong to him. He gained them by victory. He has the keys since he lives and was dead. That's the way the King James Version translates the phrase here. He is the living one, but he died. Meaning, of course, that he met death and conquered it. Meaning that he suffered death and was raised up. Here in the book of Revelation, both of these points are really a part of the imagery. Here is a lion who roars and who rules, but he looks like a lamb who has been slain. He lives, but his blood is an effective and pleasant present reality in that it purchases a people for himself and makes those people his kingdom. He looses them from their sins with his blood and then rules over them as their Lord. These people become convinced that he's their Lord and not Caesar. That puts them in a frightful condition, but it's the reason for their absence of fear and for their reassurance. And ours too. He lives. This passage says, I'm the first and the last and the living one. I died and behold, I'm alive forevermore. He blesses us, the writer of Hebrews says, by the power of an indestructible life. I love that phrase from Hebrews chapter 7. No more sacrificing. He's the firstborn from the dead, meaning that he shares the benefits of his victory with the rest of us who are in him. And then, because he lives, because he has the keys, since he lives, he himself is presented here as a sufficient reason to not be afraid. This mighty right hand of the one who conquered even death is laid upon the man who has fallen at his feet like a dead man, not for purposes of furthering that man's terror, but for comforting him. The hand which is so mighty that it can take the keys of death and Hades from the usurper of it is also so gentle that he can lay his right hand on this humbled man and say to him, don't be afraid. No need to be afraid. Fear not. But the reason is not just everything's going to be all right or this will be over soon. The reason is I am the first and the last. I'm the beginning and the end. In the Bible, this is so obvious. In the phrases that are used in the beginning of Genesis are the ones that are used in Revelation 21 and 22 to show that God has worked his plan and is doing so. This living one is the beginning and the middle and the end. He is the one who fulfills purposes and is with his people in between. In this way, Jesus is simply emphasizing his deity. Of the Father, in chapter 1 and verse 8, Revelation has him saying, I am the Alpha and the Omega. That's the first and the last letter of the alphabet. Says the Lord God, who is and who was and who is to come, the Almighty. The Christian reason to not be afraid is Christ. Because of his power, because of his presence, and because of his purpose, in which we all have a part and are recipients of his blessings. Well, why is he sufficient, a sufficient reason to not be afraid? And here is the surprising answer. Because he is to be even more feared. And I don't use feared in a bad sense this time. Because he is even more to be held in awe. He's a good reason for us not to be afraid. If you look at the images in chapter 1 here, in verses 12 and following, that John saw when he turned and looked at the voice, to us, it may be so intimidating that we don't know where to begin to work our way through it. The fact that the book of Revelation is all has sometimes been used for speculation and so forth makes it even more likely that we'll just sort of ignore it. Please don't do that. Isn't it striking that the only actual description of what Christ looks like in the whole Bible is this? There's never a word in the gospel records of what Jesus looked like physically. Here is a picture of what he looks like in glory, what he looks like now. And it's really important to realize that each of these phrases are not mysteries. They're not meant for us just to make from them whatever we want to make from them. All of them come from a background of Scripture. Really, from Daniel chapter 7 and chapter 10, most of these phrases arise. All of them are put together to emphasize that this is the one whom the prophets promised. This is the Son of Man and servant of God who came to have a kingdom that would never be destroyed, the one to whom dominion belongs, the one who fulfills God's purposes and promises. If we look at these phrases this way, it helps. It also helps if we don't try to, as one older writer described it, to unravel the rainbow here. These phrases belong together. They are intended not to be portrayed in a painting or a picture, but to have the impact on us emotionally of saying, this man, this one, this Son of Man can be taken seriously. And if you look at them, just kind of put them together in this way. He's clothed like someone who would have had a high rank or would have been of great dignity. Maybe a high priest, possibly those who were of royalty. This would have been somebody of highest importance to be clothed like this. He has his hair white like wool, like snow, not indicating that he's like some of us older, but aligning him with the Ancient of Days, the one on the throne in Daniel chapter 7. It suggests his honor and wisdom. And if we understand it that way, we'll be on the right track. His eyes, like a flame of fire, suggest his knowledge, his ability, his awareness of what's going on, his ability to see even into our hearts and minds and to know what is happening in our lives, even to be aware of imaginations and thoughts. And then his feet, like burnished bronze, are able to trample any enemy and to stand in the midst of any onslaught or difficulty. Possibly his feet are meant to suggest to us that he's able to exercise judgment when the time needs to be done, and he's able to vindicate the cause of his people just as his resurrection vindicated his own righteousness. And then his voice, like many waters. Some of the writers suggest that here's John on this little rocky island out in the sea, hearing the big waves pound against it in some storm, and knowing that even a person talking could not be heard above that sound. If you've heard a big waterfall or something, possibly you know what that sound is even like. Then his voice in speaking leads to the discussion of his words. Out of his mouth comes a sharp two-edged sword, meaning that his word is able to exercise judgment for or against unrighteousness for his righteous servants. He's able to speak and it be accomplished. And then his son, his face, like the sun shining in full strength, reminding me of Matthew 17 and verse 2, of his whole appearance at his transfiguration. Some believe that this face should be translated countenance, meaning his whole appearance. Glory, his full glory shows through here. John understands from this that this is someone to be held in awe and to be trusted and respected, and that when he lays his hands on you and says, don't fear, you can take him at heart. He's that great and can be trusted in that way. Now, there's a couple of more parts of this that need to be thought about. One is that he's among his people and he's aware of their circumstances. Notice it said here that he walks in the midst of the lampstands. It's like there are a circle of seven lampstands, and he's in the middle of them, and he's aware of what's going on in each case. We're not left to guess about this, because when we come on down to verse 20 of the same chapter, we find out these seven golden lampstands are actually seven churches. They're congregations. A congregation is present in the community to uphold light, to hold forth the word of life, to be a source of encouragement and good cheer and faith, hope, and love in the life of all its members, and hopefully in the community. You and I are still a congregation. We have a lampstand. The Lord still walks among us and knows what's going on in our lives. He wants us to engage in what's good. He wants us to do better where we fall short. He wants this to be a time when we grow and when we honor Him and bear fruit and help each other. Then the next thing is, He's taking care of the inward life of His people. He's among us not to do harm, but He, notice it says here, He has in His right hand, He holds in His right hand seven stars. And then these seven stars are said to be the angels of the seven churches. A whole lot of ink has been spilled writing about what that means. But if you look at the letters that follow in chapters 2 and 3, he'll say to the angel of the church at wherever it is, write. And then he'll conclude by saying, whoever has ears to hear, let him hear. I believe that we're to understand that he's addressing the inward spiritual life of the people in that congregation. He is paying attention in order to be able to counsel them, to shepherd them in what is needed for their well-being inwardly and spiritually. You know, that's a concern for all of us right now, as this period of time when our regular schedules are interrupted is ongoing. We need to pay attention to what's happening in our hearts and minds, in our relationships and in our thoughts. Of course, fear needs to be calmed, but also that which brings peace and joy and goodness and hope needs to be fed. And that's what Jesus does in this picture in Revelation chapters 1 through 3. So there is reason to not be afraid, all because of the living one. He has the keys of the dreaded and the unseen. Because he lives and was dead, he's now sufficient reason to not be afraid, because he's even more to be held in awe than what otherwise would make us afraid. He's among his people, aware of what we're going through, intending to help us in our inward persons to be whole and well people. The key thought in this text is this statement at the end of verse 19. Or the end of verse 17. Fear not, I'm the first and the last and the living one. Today, please think of Jesus in this way. Remember that his being the living one was not just that one moment time when it was announced that the tomb was empty. It's now. And his glory is present because he's the living one. He's able to give us life if we make the good confession and turn to his rule and allow ourselves to be united with him in obedience to the gospel. And then he's a living one to us
as we walk with Him from day to day in our lives. I encourage us to keep on doing that, to begin, if we haven't, to calm our fears by looking at the One who said, I'm the living One. Thank you for being with us this morning. We'll have another song as we prepare to remember the Lord on this Lord's Day in the Lord's Supper.